Yep.
So I'm sitting here and just...
It's a strange thing in the economy right now, but it's something that...
If I was going to look at buying a business again, it would be that the organization...
Here you go, Brett. Here's...
You're listening to the Roofing Success Podcast, a show created to inspire roofing contractors to achieve optimal success in their roofing businesses. I'm the host, Jim Aline, the co-author of the books Internet Marketing for Roofing Contractors and The Best Known Roofer. I'm also the co-founder of Roofer Marketers, the leading digital marketing agency for the roofing industry. On each episode, I sit down with industry leaders to talk about their processes, the lessons they've learned, and how to find success in roofing.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast. If you can, hit those buttons, subscribe, share, comment, leave us a review, all of those things. Keep tuning in, even if you don't press those buttons. We appreciate it. Today we got Brett Heisinger from Hometown Roofing, Omaha, Nebraska. How's it going, yes, Brett? Sir.
It's going well.
Awesome, man.
Sunny and warm here, so it can't
sunny complain. And warm. We're having this. We're having a wonderful winter up here in the Twin Cities also. I am not upset that it didn't get cold. I'm not upset at all. It's fine with me. So, yes, Brett, how did you get into roofing?
So I didn't originally get into roofing, right? Like most of us, we didn't have a dream of being a roofer, right? So I had actually been in finance and worked at TD Ameritrade here in town for many years. I was actually a financial advisor for a while. I always wanted to do my own thing. So I always kind of had an eye out, kind of that entrepreneurial itch, if you will. My dad ran a supply house for plumbing. My father-in-law, my future father-in-law, was owned a supply house for roofing, actually. So in my teens and stuff, I would kind of help what would be my future father-in-law with roofing. My intro into roofing was helping tear off and doing the grunt work and that type of stuff, like in my teens. And fast forward to end up marrying my wife, whose dad happens to be in the roofing industry, right? And so I just was always around roofing. I ended up doing stuff in like real estate, flipping houses and stuff a little bit throughout the years that so I guess I had some, I'll call it like light contracting experience, right? So it was always something that I can't say I was passionate about it, but I had a little bit of a knack for it. I liked doing it, a lot of the stuff myself. So then fast forward to being on a trip in Germany, of all places, at Oktoberfest, of all places. And just by happenstance, my father-in-law and some of his roofing buddies and me and my wife cross paths there. So I got to hang out with them in a beer tent all day. And you talk about a lot of stuff when you're in a beer tent all day. So I ended up saying, hey, if you ever decide to sell your business, just the way he talked about Hometown and the way that he talked about his customers, I'm like, that's a really, he liked what he did and he liked his customers, which I think is a very important thing. So I said, hey, if you ever decide to sell this thing, I'm interested. Right. He wasn't even interested in selling at the time, but about 8 years later, I got a phone call and he said, you know, I'm ready to be done. I was ready to be done doing financial advising. Cause if I had to talk about a Roth IRA one more time, I have to take severe action. So, you know, the transaction goes through, you do all the fun stuff and buying a business, which, man, that's I could see why it's tough, you know, to get out of a business when you're a small business owner, at least, right? Like, so I went through that. But yeah, it happened pretty quick and we just never looked back. And since then, it's just been taking a business that was like file cabinets. I have pictures of it. Just every, we don't have a very big office, but like every room had like 10 file cabinets in it. So we're just doing scanning and everything. And then we ended up getting Job Nimbus and in 2019. So I took over in 2018 and 2019. We really started getting everything digitized and pointed in the.
Yeah, it must be interesting. Like when you're, I mean, there's, it's a different path when you're taking over versus starting. And I would, you know, it's kind of like there's kind of an analogy, you know, people say it sometimes, like when you go and hire sales reps, it's like, I'd rather hire someone new than have to retrain, you know, someone with bad habits, right? Like, was that some of the stuff you had to go through in that? Like, man, I have to rebuild this business in a lot of ways that I didn't expect to.
Yeah, I would say right from day one of me officially being in the office, things went awry. So when I originally planned on taking over this business, there was a manager. So the old owner had a manager that was pretty much running stuff, right? So the old owner was not 100% hands off, but we'll say 60%.
Yeah.
The day I came in, it's kind of a little bit of a tragic story too, is the manager's wife had passed away that day. So it set off a chain of events that were odd, right? It's already a new relationship. I had met him once or twice, told him to take as much time as he wanted. And you know, when something like that happens to a person, like it fundamentally changes like your outlook on life. So it ended up that it just didn't work out to have him as a manager. He wasn't from here originally, so he wanted to go back to where he was from. So immediately day one, I'm like, throw the plan out the window because I thought I'd have someone to take all that time. So then I was just kind of pushed right into, it's me, right?
Wow.
It's all me doing it. So luckily I had, you know, I had a couple guys that were selling that had been doing it for a long time. My one salesman has been here for a long time, still here. Some older guys that were with us that eventually attritioned out just from, unfortunately, other health circumstances. Like, this is kind of funny too. It's one of those things, like you look back now, it's like, it sounds horrible, but they were all saying, they called this place the Boneyard because it was like a lot of the older generation, they were all kind of ready to be retired, but they'd all have these health things come up. So eventually a lot of those guys moved on and retired really. And so it was kind of left with me and the only leftover personnel was Jeff in the office here, my main sales guy. And then we have my crews, which was huge for us. So my crews have been around putting roofs on for 20-25 years, so it's a huge advantage for us.
Yeah, definitely. So I mean, there's definitely advantage in not having to build it, right? Like there were some pieces, but my goodness, that took a turn on you. Like the day you bought it, like that's like, okay, this is, I'm coming in, I'm going to buy the business. It's kind of running already, you know? Yeah. And then it was like, here you go, Brett.
Here's some. It was right into the fire. And looking back now, I tell people like it probably was better.
Yeah.
Right. Because I had to go from zero to what I thought would be 60 to zero to 160. And, you know, that first year, and then, you know, on top of it, that was 2018 is when I took over. 2019, a storm hit our area. So I'm in here, you know, 7 days a week. Because again, back we were paper.
Yep.
So I'm sitting here just going through files as fast as I can. Never want to go back to that again, but you know, you do what it takes.
You do what it takes. Yeah. Is it better than telling people about Roth IRAs all day long?
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot more exciting.
So you found the right path. It's working out, right? Go for it.
I was going to say, one of the good parts, I get to go outside too.
Yes. Right?
Every once in a while, at least.
Every once in a while, at least, right? Like it's the office jobs are not, it's not fun. It's definitely not fun. What are some of the other key lessons, or what are some of the key lessons that you learned about buying a business? You know, when you going through the process?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones, probably the due diligence side of things. Like you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I feel like I'm pretty good at taking like some calculated risks.
Yeah.
So you kind of have an idea of what that is. You don't calculate in the fact that the manager is going to be gone the day you start.
Yeah. That's an unexpected one right there. Yeah. Yeah.
You can't account for everything, but at the same time, you know, you're betting on yourself more than anything else when you go into a transaction like that. Definitely, like in hindsight, the things I would have done even more of, like I was lucky that I came from an industry that was finance. Mm-hmm. So I understood kind of how to look at the numbers better, the income sheets, the balance sheets, like the P&Ls. Like that was kind of my, I guess, quasi advantage. So that I understood that, but what I didn't understand is like the business aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So I think if I could do it again, it would be more of like organizational structure and things to kind of like really understand.
Yeah. Explain that more. Go into what about the business side of things. You understood the finance side of things. What are some of those things that, like, what are those business components that maybe you had your some weaknesses in or hadn't thought about?
Yeah, like you just think of an org chart.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you look at an org chart, like I had an idea, okay, there's a manager on it, but like what does that really mean? What are his responsibilities? Do they have employment agreements laid out? Like it was for me it was a big gap in like the people aspect.
Mm.
So if I would have taken more time to figure out, okay, who are the people? What are their roles? What are they supposed to be doing? Because when you look at most companies, yeah, there's companies out there that do a ton of revenue, but like they're just flying by the seat of their pants the whole time.
That's right.
And I, yeah,
I see them all the time, Brett. I talk to them. I'm like, oh my goodness, you're like, yeah, they're, you know, there's an announcement building the plane on the way up. Right. Like they are, there's companies doing numbers that are still putting the pieces together as it's going.
Yeah. And I think there's always a component of that.
Yeah.
But like, I don't want that to be the whole thing.
Yes.
Right. Like there's gotta be some semblance. So that would be one thing. If I was going to look at buying a business again, it would be that the organization chart and how things are structured. Cause a big thing to know is like, are you buying a business or are you buying a job?
Yeah.
Right? I thought I was buying a business, I bought a job, and now I'm turning it into a business.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I looked at it at the time. So that would be one of the biggest components, I would say.
What have you, so let's go into detail a little bit more about then. It sounds like you've spent some time on it now. You've put some thought into it. What are some of the key things that you look at from your org chart, and how maybe in terms of how you're planning your if you're planning on growing or adding team members or just duties and responsibilities, to how have you kind of come to like understand the org chart better for your business?
So what I try to do is I look at what is the org chart today. Like how are we structured today and what are everyone's responsibilities? So even just starting there and writing that down helps.
Yeah.
Like what is this person actually doing during the day and what are they really trying to get? Like what's their main goal? So I start there, and then over time now, as I've learned the industry more, like, you know, we're in an insurance area. There's the supplementing aspect. There's the sales aspect. There's the production aspect. There's the billing. So you have like these different departments. So then what I try to do is look kind of like one step forward and say, what does this org chart need to look like in 2 years from now? Mm. And so like right now, for instance, we're not a huge company, but when I look at my sales guys should be selling, in my opinion. Like I came from a background, like that's one thing when I first got into the roofing industry too. And I see like, so as sales, let me get this right. You're going out, you're taking a lead or finding your own leads. You're going and selling that. Now you have to basically make the work order. You have to show up on site as customer service.
Yeah.
So your sales, your admin, your customer service, and your collections, right? That's the cradle to grave as I've come to understand it. And I just thought that's like not insanity. It's just to have one person that has that, all those skill types is
not efficient. Yeah. But that's, yes. I like your point there too. It's to find someone that's good at all of those things.
Yes.
It's probably challenging, right? Yeah.
Because normally you got sales is relationships. Like supplementing is detail.
Yeah.
And those two things are like,
to the me, opposite those are of each other. Yeah. Things. There's very few sales reps that are detail oriented.
Right. So I look at that and I say, well, how can I fill that gap? It's kind of like, you know, strengths and weaknesses. Like, okay. So now I know a lot of people go to models like kind of like an internal sales, external sales role, where the internal sales is more the supplementing and that type of thing. So that's where we're kind of moving towards that direction and away from more of the cradle to grave. So that would be something in the org chart that I look at. It's like, well, how do I pull these things apart and then move someone into doing these specific tasks? And I think that's also a component of like, as you grow, you just, people hit capacity. And in a cradle to grave, like most sales guys are going to hit capacity in a storm pretty quick, or customers start having a really terrible experience.
That's the other side of it, right? If your team is over capacity, there's definitely a customer experience aspect of it that suffers. They're not getting back to people in time. They don't, you know, they're not keeping up with their, with keeping the homeowner informed in the process. So now we're looking at it from the org chart, right? You got your org chart, you're paying attention to it. It's an actual, like something that you're actually paying it. Is it something that you pay attention to, or you break it out once a year or twice a year and you're kind of, okay, what are we doing here? Pen to paper, or how do you do that?
Yeah. I use there's this bubble.us. So I just make a little like bubble flow chart.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'm looking at like at least once a year. You know, I'm in, I don't know, I'm sure people have heard of Breakthrough Academy.
Yeah.
I'm in that group, and you know, that planning at the end of the year is a big aspect of it. Part of the reason I joined with that is like, that's, you know, that planning aspect and having that accountability to get that done is huge. So that's when I take that time towards the end of the year, that December, January timeframe, and really start trying to formulate some semblance of a plan for the coming year. So that's when I look at the org chart, and then I'm trying to execute on what I want that org chart to look like through the year.
Yeah.
So my goal this year, like I said, was like, I want to start that internal sales role. And then I have another role that's kind of like, if I get it done, great. If not, it's going to be the 2025, which is more of like a field staff role. So I kind of look at it as like, what do I want it to look like? And then start pushing towards what I want it to look like.
I've hired fractional CFOs and businesses along the way. And I always felt that was, maybe that's like, you kind of get, maybe you get a little bit of that from your finance background, or maybe it comes natural to you, but like, I think that another aspect of it that I'd love to for you to chime in on around it, but like, we're looking at the org chart a lot of times. Okay, these are the people that we need. From a finance perspective, how are you looking at when you're able to?
Yeah, that is, that does go down to budget, to be honest with you. Because if I look at my end of the year revenue, and I look at what my net profit was, if I'm really heavy on my net profit, it's great, right? That means, oh, you know, we're making a ton of money, but that also means that I was probably inefficient with my time. That's kind of how I look at it in some regards, not always, but like.
No, say that again, because I think that's an important point for small business owners to understand. Like,
So if you're, net profit is really big. That means that you yourself could have been inefficient with your time, because that means I'm doing a bunch of tasks that I probably could have paid someone else to do. So if I have, I'm just going to make it round numbers. So if I have $100,000 of extra money, right? Like, I'm Dutch. My lifestyle is like super low, so it doesn't take much for me to live.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have the convenience of having someone else do those tasks. So if I have that extra 100, you know, maybe, and it cost me $50K to have someone else do a task. Okay. Right. I still am kind of making that 50, but now I have another person that can do other things.
Yeah.
And maybe more than just the task. So now I gain another kind of notch up, and it pulls me out. So now I can go on the next higher level thing. So I really look at it as like, is it an investment? Like I'm taking those dollars. I could keep it the same, which is fine. Like, but if you want to grow, you have to look at, that has to be a big enough number that you can reinvest it.
Yeah.
And when it's big enough, then you can keep moving.
A key point that I think that you said there was that you can move on to higher value things. So, you know, when you get stuck in the $25 an hour job duties and you're spending, you know, 4 hours in there that you could have, you know, invested in a team member that was, you know, that was at $25 an hour for that job. You get, it's a funny thing in business. There's always something to work on, right? Like my business partner, Brian, and I have always said this, and it's crazy now, you know, we're after the Job Nimbus acquisition and we're even, you know, much larger and there's hundreds of team members. And it's like, there's always something to work on. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, there's always another thing to work on. We had a conversation one time, like, I think it was when we got to about the 30 team members, and we were having lunch one day, and it was like, my goodness, like, we're just as busy now as than when it was, you know, just the two of us getting this thing started, right? Like,
yeah,
but we're doing such different things, like,
yes,
much more high value tasks. So if you're getting sucked into those low value tasks, you're going to have to start making those decisions. Yeah. How do you look at that personally? Like, how do you judge, man, I'm spending too much time in doing these things. That's something I need to get off my plate. How do you think about that?
Well, I mean, one of the best things I do is if you do a little bit of block scheduling on your calendar, right? And so I'll go through time periods. I'm not always great at it, like, but I'll go through time periods of maybe like a month or two where I block schedule out a week, and then I will go and change it during that week. So if I didn't actually do that, and then I just color code on my Google Calendar, like I'll do admin, marketing, sales, production. So I just color code for each one of those areas. Mm. And I say, what the task that I'm doing, where is it in my system right now? And can I get rid of it? So like, there's one right now. I don't know. Like, I keep meaning to shove this off, but I still do it. Like, I pay the subcontractor still. It's a gigantic waste of my time. We have it set up. Everyone knows what they're getting paid. There's little extras that come at the end of the roofing thing every time, but it's like, there's no point. Like, someone else can talk to them about this thing, this extra couple hundred dollars. Like, it's not something I need to be doing. Yet that's one of those things that it's like, I've been doing this since 2018, and yet it didn't happen until like this winter. I'm like, what am I doing?
Why am I doing this still? Yeah.
And one aspect was that is my time. I get to talk to people.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, and you know how, like, with subcontractors, especially, like, they don't want to sit down unless there's a paycheck.
That's right.
Right. They want to be out working, which I totally understand. So that's kind of been my time to have that back and forth exchange, but I just don't need as much of that now. Like, the relationships have been built. So now it's more of like letting that go. So it's just things like that, and really just looking at like, what is annoying me? Like, that's usually a number one indicator that like, I'm so sick of doing this thing. Cause usually you've got it to the point where you're just going boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that's usually the stuff that you can process out pretty easily.
Yeah. That's a good way to think of it. I always think of what I procrastinate on. Cause what's annoying me. It's another way to put it, right? Like, if I'm procrastinating on it and it's just a task-based thing, I'm like, I shouldn't be doing this anymore. Like I don't want to do this. I guess it is thinking about what you're good at, what you like to do, what you don't like to do, what you're good at, what you're not good at. We run EOS, yeah, which I know with Breakthrough Academy, they have a not EOS, but there's a lot of similarities between the structure that Breakthrough Academy helped you guys put in place. And it's called Delegate and Elevate in EOS. And it's like, you just write down all the things you do and you write them down in quadrants. And one quadrant is, I like to do it and I'm good at it. I like to do it, I'm not good at it. you write them down. And the last quadrant is, I don't like to do it and I'm not good at it. Like, start there. And then, move everything else off your chart until you're doing the things that you like to do and you're good at, right? And those would be those higher level tasks, hopefully, Or if it's not, it's a business. I think that, a lot of times we don't think about it, but we always want to become the CEO, right? Like, we always think of as an owner, you become the CEO, but you don't have to be. There is a separation between roles in a business and ownership of a business. Right. Just because you hold stock does not mean that you get a title, a specific title.
It's a different mindset. I mean, that's the working in versus
work. That's right.
Working in the business or on the business.
With the finance background, you got to go through, you said, you were competent at the P&L, right? You knew, you understood the numbers and at least how to read the numbers and do that. What are some of the numbers that matter most that contractors should be paying attention to on their P&L or on their income statements, balance sheets, well, in their financials on a month to month, year over year basis? What are some of those things? Like, this is what I think. These are the numbers to pay attention to make sure that we have a healthy business.
I mean, the gross profit's going to be the first thing, right? Like, after what we call COGS or cost of goods sold, because there you have to be careful. And that's where, if you're looking at the COGS and what are the cost of goods sold, are these actual cost of goods sold or are these just like monthly expenses? Because you really have to delineate between those two things. And people debate on what you put where, but to me it's pretty simple, because if there's enough left over, right, on the gross profit, you got to get that number to a point where you have enough money for the expensive so you can hire the additional staff.
That's right.
Or support staff, as I'll call it, right? You have to have that so you can get better software, that you can get better marketing. If you are running out of gas on your gross profit already, like, you're never going to save your net profit. Right? So if your gross profit's 10%.
So what would be like, if we said green, yellow, red, right? Like, gross profit margin greater than is green. Gross profit between X and Y is yellow, and gross profit below something would indicate red to you. In a storm restoration market like you're in, we're not thinking retail, because that's, I would assume you know that side of it better, right?
Yeah. I mean, my baseline number, and I think this is not just for roofing, this is for any business. You got to be at like 33%. It's just it's weird how the numbers work out, but you got to be at that. If you're under that, like, you could maybe squeak by on 30, but
so after so that, under 33% is red. Like, we got problems here. Like, we need to know what's going on. We better figure this out fast, or we are going to be the statistic of someone that closes down, of that small business that fails. Yeah.
Yeah. Your operating capital is going to be so tight that you're going to feel like you're always begging the bank for money, or your brother, or whoever else you can get money from, because there's jobs coming. You just can't pay to, order anything because you're running yourself out of cash. So that would be in a storm restoration, you should be closer to 40 probably, in gross profit is more of like what I would call the green. So maybe I'd put 33 as the orange.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
So somewhere between 33 and 40, you're going to be okay. But yeah, 33 to 30, you're getting into the red zone for sure.
And that's including your time.
Yes.
Right? Like we got to – like as we said, your profit margins can go up, and we're talking about net profit earlier, but like your net profit could go up, but your gross margins will reflect your time not being reflected in your financials also.
Right.
Right. So if you're not paying yourself a salary, if you're only taking distributions when the cash is in the bank and you're just pulling money out when you see it there, like you probably don't have a good view of your margins.
100%. That's a big one too. I would say is like as owners, you know, it was at Mike Michalowicz.
Oh yeah. Profit first. Yep.
Yeah. Love that book. And a lot of it, even if you don't follow that directly, is like you got to – if you don't pay yourself first, like you'll always be on a cash crunch. Like even if you didn't actually spend the money but you put it in a bank account, like that's kind of what he does, right? Take the little bit of profit, put it somewhere else. At least you know, hey, if I need it, right, if I screwed up, I'm okay.
Yep.
But if you don't have that, like you're done for.
You're in trouble. Yeah. That's a great book. If anyone hasn't read it, Profit First is a great, great book. There's also Profit First for Contractors. Sean wrote that book. Sean, he's been on the podcast. One of the early episodes of the Roofing Success Podcast. I had him on. Okay. So he put a spin on it where it was like Profit First, but more for, you know, for contractors. So great book to read there too. Some of those things, you know, you could get really in the weeds. It takes a lot to learn those, like what the numbers mean. So you have your, you know, are you looking at other things like labor percentages? You know, is there a number you're looking for in that regard? What are some of the other categories on that P&L that you're really paying attention to?
Yeah. I mean, on the COG side, labor and materials are going to be your two biggest ones in our industry. Right. So that's actually one of the things I did when I first, when I first took over the business, when I was looking at those numbers, I'm like, what's the average percentage that I'm spending in labor? What's the average percent they're spending in materials? So I could look back at 5 years of data, get a pretty simple number. And so that's definitely one thing I look at. Like during COVID, I'm sure a lot of people had this, like the materials shot up for a while. And you go up, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you go up 1 or 2% in one category, but if you go 1 or 2% in another category, pretty soon your 40s to 35 or your 35 to 30. Like it can 1% is not that much.
Yeah.
Right? It can be a big number, but percentage wise, it's not that much. So definitely I pay attention to those numbers. And the nice part is they're fairly set, except during the COVID timeframe. I got to look at, what you pay people is always one of the biggest expenses, right? So even if you're below the line, you got to pay attention to, what those numbers are based on that gross profit. So if you're coming out and you have, we'll take round numbers again, 40% on your gross profit, but you're paying 18% in wages, something's wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like something's not right. You're not being efficient on the people side of things. So that's one thing where you got to pay attention to. It's like every year when I do a budget, right? It's not like I'm not perfect on my budget every year, but you can be pretty close on most things on the bigger categories, like, you know, marketing, labor, software, tech stack, whatever you want to call it. You should be within a range of those numbers at least, or at least if I know if I'm way overspending, if it's 6 months into the year and I budgeted 4%, but I'm at 10.
Something's
real wrong, right?
There's something about, like, forecasts are always wrong, right? Like, but yeah. And so you have to understand that and know how to, but what is the cadence that you do in your business to kind of, you know, make sure you're on track? Are you looking at your numbers weekly, monthly, quarterly? Like, when are you deep diving and really trying to make sure that, you know, and there's a seasonality to your business too, right? Being in Omaha, so is it something that you're looking at in the off season, or, you know, are you making, like, how and when are you looking at those numbers on an ongoing basis? What's your cadence?
Yeah. So annually is when I set the budget.
Yep.
And I'm like, that's one thing, again, this is me being the finance background nerd that I am. Like, I'll look at each one of those categories and I'll put a little note on my spreadsheet that says what's going into that and kind of like why I'm doing it. And sometimes if you write the why you're doing it, it helps you like remember. So then all I have to do is look at QuickBooks, right? So I don't even have like a certain cadence. I'll look at my QuickBooks because everyone wants, well, at least for me, I'm like, I want to see what my P&L is doing, right? Like I'll just look at it. And in QuickBooks, if my spreadsheet budget matches my line items in my QuickBooks, I know immediately what is going to be out of whack. So, you know, for me, like looking at it hard, it's probably once a month, maybe.
Okay.
Where I'm really like, okay, what's going on here? You know, or I'll just kind of look through transactions sometimes and see like what big transactions came through. And is that because I paid a yearly amount or what was that? Cause that can throw the numbers off too. So, that's kind of I don't have a formal review way, but that setting that at the beginning of the year, that's it. Like,
yeah,
then it's in here.
I like that. Adding the why. Like that's great advice. Adding the why, because it puts perspective to the number or context to the number of why you're paying attention to that. When you're doing yearly budgeting, I mean, I don't think it's something that a lot of small businesses do, right? Like a lot of contractors, like actually sitting down and working out a budget for the year, right? Like it's a hard thing to do. And it's hard a lot of times because you're forecasting, right? You don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to have a storm? Are we going to have a big storm, a small storm, like what's going to happen here? What are some tips that you can share with people to help go through that process?
Yeah. I mean, I think starting, if you have, well, let's start here. First, track your numbers, right? Like if you're not doing that, that's the first thing you need to do. And then once you're tracking, like give yourself a little bit of time to get like baseline numbers, because you can't just start tracking day one and then you have, you got to have some data, right? So even if you can get through 1 year, the first year the goal is to track, the second year I'm going to make a budget, right, based on that year before. And then year two, you've got even more data, like, well, how close was I? And you just keep kind of dialing it in. So I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is like thinking, I'm going to make this budget, it's going to be great. It's like, no, it's a process. Like, and you can't fast forward the time it takes to get that data information. So that's the first thing, is just build that up, because now I'm, you know, year five. So now when I look at it, I've started to do, okay, here's what I think's going to happen. But now I look at what's my break even. So another way to say that is, like, out of all my expenses that I'm planning on spending at my whatever my target revenue is, let's say my revenue got cut in half. What does my net profit look like if all my expenses stay the same? Even though, you know, if that happens, that number's probably going to go down. But I'm like, okay, if I got my revenue cut in half, am I going bankrupt? Yeah. Or am I going to be okay? Right? Like that's the reality. So you know where is it that your hair is going to be on fire? And then do the opposite. It's like, well, what if what I was shooting for doubles? Right? Like, because in our industry, that's, this, right, is one of the things too. a storm overnight can drastically change everything.
Everything.
So you have to ask, yeah.
Yeah. Throw it out the window. Like that. Yeah.
And hey, revenue solves a lot of problems, but I don't want to lose all my efficiencies.
Yes.
When that revenue comes in, because I don't want to work for, okay, if I'm doing 4 million, now I'm going to do 8 million. That first 4 million, if I'm netting 25%, but the second 4 million only nets me 5%, what was the point in doing the next 4 million? Like it was, what a waste of time to make 5% on, you know, not that it's, sometimes that's the case, right? When you're going through growth phases of, but to me, you've got to be ready or at least think about like, hey, if a big storm hits, what else am I going to need? Like, do I need another admin? Do I need more sales guys? Do I need another crew? What does that look like?
That's an interesting thought to look at it and to go, well, man, if we do add this and we're only going to net 5%, like, yeah, that's, there's too much risk there, right? Like there's too much risk in that. Like you don't collect some depreciation checks and things like you're done, man. Or what, you know, like you don't collect your some supplements that you were expecting. And all of a sudden like that 5% goes to zero, goes to negative. And then why did you do it? Right. Like, that's a good thought process on that. And then, you know, I guess, you know, we talked about gross margins, you know, what are healthy, what would we do? Green, yellow, red, then that makes me think of like a green, yellow, red also around net profit, right? Like, you know, with a business that you're buying that you've bought your time back out of maybe, right? That you are actually running a business. What do you see in, you know, now that you've been here for, like you said, 5 years, you're seeing it, you're in the industry, you know, the industry now a lot, you know, where's that net profit margin that you're like, that's red, man. That's not like we're, you know, we're not even playing there.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, red is, you know, 5% net.
Yeah.
Red. Right. I'd say you're at 10%. You're doing well. I'd say you're like you're pretty much green there if you're doing 10%. And like to your point, you're paying yourself already.
You're paying yourself. Yeah, your money isn't based on that 10%. Like you've already you've been paid. Also, that's the profit of the business. Yeah.
And then 15%. You're doing well.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm gonna make a target for myself, like it's always 15%. And I say like in my mind, 15% is my minimum. I know I'm going to be okay at 10 and I'm going to survive at 5.
Yeah.
But if I can do, I want to do 20 or 25.
Yeah.
Right. Like I really want to do 20. I like 15, 10. I'm okay. 5. I'm like, it's not worth it.
And then does that change in your mind at different levels of the business now? Because, you know, you took over a business that was doing X amount. Now you've grown it a little bit to a different level. And then you probably have gotten to know us, you know, maybe in Breakthrough Academy and, you know, knowing some people doing in that, you know, eight figures, multiple eight figures. You know, where does that change as you're going along? Like if you're an owner operator doing 2 million, you're doing everything yourself, you know, or most everything yourself, like, are you shooting for, like, if I'm not making 20, 25, I'm not even showing up for work today kind of thing? Or, you know, how are you thinking about that?
Yeah. So if you're an owner operator, right? Like it's a little different than if you're 100% hands off.
Yeah.
Like I said, at that 5% level, man, it's hard to like justify even.
Yeah, we're not showing up to work for 5% if I'm the owner operator. Like, yeah.
I call it headache money, right? Yeah. Like, what's my headache worth every day? Because it's going to be a headache every day, you know, to some degree. So you got to look at what that's worth. But I think, too, just like your question, I have to say there's a caveat to like, where are you in your business?
Because for sure.
If you're pushing growth,
yeah,
like I haven't, even for me right now, I've been trying to set up processes. Like, we're getting to that point where I'm just about ready to kind of hit the gas pedal more, because I feel comfortable that we can handle more coming in and not lose that customer service aspect, which I think is the number one thing about this. And so if I'm going through a growth phase, if I'm normally at 15, I might be okay with 7.5, because I might be pushing 7.5% of my net forward into whatever that thing I think is going to give me that return, not next year, but, or not this year, right? I'm spending that 7.5% this year, but I'm expecting to like bear the fruit next year on it. Yeah. And I won't know till next year. And that's a scary thing.
So, but if you are, this is, I think, a point to make there. If you are, what you're, and correct me if I'm wrong in what you're thinking, but if you're going into growth mode, and you're going to take a reduction in your net profit because of that, that money, that the difference is what you are investing in the future, not what, not just a reduction in profit, right? Like if it's just a reduction in profit and you are not taking that money and reinvesting it into people, into marketing, into things that will accelerate that growth or help maintain your customer experience through that growth period, that's where the problem is.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm not, because if I'm planning on spending an extra 7.5%, because I'm basing my numbers off of my 15% net, and then I only netted 7.5%, I have 0%.
That's right.
That is worst case. Well, that's not worst case scenario. I guess you could go negative, but
yeah,
that just sounds awful. So yeah, getting that net profit to that comfortable level, not just for your own, not just for yourself, right?
Yeah.
And some people, that's okay. Like, they want their business to be this size and they just want, they have a certain dollar amount they want to make, and that's great. But if you're looking to like level up and grow, I think you got to get that net profit margin nice so that you can reinvest. And for me, that's like, you know, that's part of what we do this for, at least for me, is like, it's creating jobs for people. Mm. I mean, that's what we do on a day by day basis, right? Like, we're here to create opportunities, and that's kind of the way I see it is, yeah, it's fun making money, but at the end of the day, there's a certain point where it's fun to see other people like make money and level up.
When your business turns into a business, I don't know if that might be terrible analogy here, but like, when your business turns into a business, it becomes about people. Right. Like, I think that every business ends up being it's a, like, when you get to a certain level, you're like, oh my goodness, it's just people. Like, it's your people and processes, of course. Right. But like, the processes, the product that you're selling, to quote Marcus Lemonis, the profit, right? Like, you know, but the people component is what, like, that is the business, right? Like, mm-hmm. How have you built the team? I got to meet some of them out at the Job Nimbus Crew event. You guys are, you know, like, how have you built that team and that company culture? And how was it, I guess, how was the transition from the old, what did you call it? The graveyard, the boneyard, right? How did you transition the culture from being that into, you know, kind of the lively, you know, fun atmosphere that you guys have today?
Yeah. I wish I would have been more, like planned out, right?
Intentional, maybe would be a word, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's what that goes back to, like, your question on like, what would I do differently if I bought a business? It's like, well, think about that culture aspect. It's that people aspect. So I think just through time and how I operate, like Jeff, my one sales guy that was left over from the old administration, he kind of had that, the customer service aspect and the, so I'd call it like the care for the customer and the desire to do things well. right? And those are two really big things, because if you have that desire to do things well, it kind of goes hand in hand with the customer, right? That means you care about that person because you want to do a good job for them. You're not just there to like, hey, let me slap on that roof and get that paycheck real quick.
Yeah.
Like you want to actually help people out, and that just snowballs. But so as far as like conscious things I did, I wish I had a sweet list of like, do this to make it amazing. But we're such a small group that I think it's, you know, like kind attracts like kind.
Yeah.
And it's kind of been a little bit of that.
How did the group come together? Like, were you actively recruiting, or did you just say, hey Jeff, do you know anyone? We need this role. And Jeff knew someone, or like, did you go out on Indeed and put up job postings and like, how did you get a like-minded group together?
Yeah, well, it was a lot of that, I will say. So like my production manager came to me. He actually saw my truck parked outside, right? And happened to be living close by. And I had a posting for, at the time it was a project coordinator position, right? And so that one came to be, and just through interviews, like, okay, you know, this is that interview process. You know, that's part of the BTA teaches that well, but I had some experience. Like when I was in college, had to hire and fire a bunch of people in one of my roles. I won't go into all that, but like, so I understood kind of how to ask the questions and how to get information that you think is actually real versus just, I want a job. So I guess that's kind of one of the ways where I like this person is a good screener. For culture, because if you don't like them or they bother you for some reason, if it's in that moment, it's only going to be 10 times worse later on. That was, I think, my only job post hiring, other than it has been word of mouth. So one of my other sales guys came from an agent that I knew. One of my other sales guys came from, Jeff, it was someone he worked with, in the past. I have my front offices, you know, she's a virtual assistant down in Columbia, but I got her through a service, but now I've actually tacked on some other, I'll call them virtual roles, through people that she knows. Right. So it's all been kind of like you said, it's more organic than anything else.
Yeah. That's awesome. What's your favorite interview question?
Favorite interview question?
Yeah. Do you have one of those that's like, I know like some people, like they have these like certain ones that they love and they're like, I gotta ask this, so that like, and they're looking for a certain response. I don't know. You said the way you said that you hired and fired a lot of people, I thought that you might have one of those
it's something a little simple. It's like, it's just the question, tell me more about that. Right. It sounds dumb, but like you could ask any question, but tell me more about that and see how deep you can get that answer. Cause most people, if it's rehearsed, there's not much more after. Tell me more about that. Tell me more about it. You know, you'll hear one little key thing. Tell me more about that one time you were playing baseball and you scraped your knee, and how did you handle that? You know, tell me more about that. And that's, I feel like that's a really simple way to get.
Yeah. People will expose themselves through that, right? Like they'll expose their abundance of knowledge or lack of knowledge, or, you know what I mean? If that's a good way to put it, like they're going to expose their, what they do if there's a shallow answer there. That's awesome. You have a virtual team. You have how has that been? How did that come about, and what roles do you have, on your remote team, right? Like your overseas team, your South American team, right? Like your cross continent team, you know?
So it kind of started, I had heard whispers of it happening, you know, even some, I don't think it was, maybe it was BTA, but even I went to like Dimitri, the Roofing Insights conference, and they had, I think it was called Work Ninjas at the time.
Okay.
It was a story, basically someone who owned a roofing company in Dallas, and they were from Mexico, and they went back to Mexico and basically hired their whole town to be virtual assistants because they know how to do it. They just have to teach the people. And there's cost savings there because the cost of living outside of the United States is much lower. So you can get really fantastic people for not as much dollars and cents. Yeah. So your dollar stretches further, and it's not like you're paying someone a pauper's wage. It's like the cost of living is completely different. And when you understand that fact, I think it opens your eyes. Like, you could be a huge blessing to people outside of the United States.
You're paying them a middle-class, upper-middle-class wage a lot of times, right? Like, and you're like, this is crazy. This is, and they're like, oh no, this is like, I'm never leaving your company.
And people have degrees outside of the United States.
That's right.
People, right? But they just want to live where they're from.
Yeah.
Right. Like, there's people that you can find educated in the States that just wanted to live back home and are fantastic people, fantastic employees. And so just getting into that more, and I think COVID fast forwarded this
for sure.
I think this is a trend. So we all know, at least I'm older ish, right? Like, we remember still, Microsoft and Dell, you call them and you end up in India with someone who has a really thick accent that you can't understand.
Yeah.
Well, things have progressed. Like, English is more out there. COVID made it so that even what we're doing right now on video, I mean, through Google Suite, like, it's like having that person right next to you. I can access that person face to face at any time. So I just think the setup is there for this to work. And, unfortunately, I hate to say it, but like, in America, there is a gap on the lower end starter jobs, as I'll call it. Right. Cause I don't see a $15 hour job as like a bad thing. It's just that you're someone who doesn't have the skills yet. So you need to skill up. So you start there, but you don't have to end there.
Yeah.
No one said you had to stop. You can find more things to do. But to get into that, it's really hard to find someone who wants to grow. Like, it, like with younger people, it's a little bit easier, I have found. But at the same time, that's one of the catalysts for me pushing to the VA, because I did lose my front office, and it was a struggle to fill that position and to find someone that really understood this is not just a answer the phone and then go back to playing on your cell phone all day. This is a, like, let's work. And like, it just doesn't,
there's something going on, Brett. Like, I was at an event recently, and there was a guy that spoke there. His name is Greg Crabtree. He wrote a book called Simple Numbers, Straight Talk, Big Profits. And he was talking about the labor participation rate and, cost of labor and things like that, and the birth rate, and that we have entered a cycle in the labor market where we're at nearly full employment, and he said something to a room of 250 people. He said, how many of you know five people that are unemployed right now? Like, no one. Like, out of the whole room, no one knew five people that were unemployed. And then he went, well, does anyone know three? Right? Does anyone know one person that is unemployed that cannot find a job? Not that they're not cannot find their dream job or a job that they would enjoy, but cannot find employment. And I thought, man, that was a little prolific, right? Like, when you actually think about it, and that's a part of, labor costs are going up for a lot of roles, right? Like, that office manager, you know, might have been, you know, whatever it was years, you know, 5 years ago to where that wage is now to get a high quality person that's not going to just go back to their phone, like you said, right? Like there's, it's that there's the jobs are there, right? So it's, you know, there's not anyone that has that need as much of a need to work and get ahead, right? Like, and because that, oh, well, if it doesn't work out at hometown, I'll just go over here because there's another job that'll pay me $15 an hour, no problem. Like,
right.
You know, there's some McDonald's paying $22-$25 an hour, right? Like it's, you know, so, yeah. So it's a strange thing in the economy right now, but it's something that from his perspective was we better get used to it because this is what it's going to be like for the foreseeable future. And so that overseas talent pool is something that, man, might be something to start looking at, especially when you're trying to build a business. Right? You know, you gotta, man, you have to have that different mindset. You have to have a different mindset, right? You got to get it done, but sometimes you don't have the money to get that person in the U.S. yet in your office or, you know, so lots of tough decisions, but great people overseas. What were the roles that you hired? What roles do you have overseas now?
So right now, I have,
I guess, on the other continent.
Basically, my front office.
Continent. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Office, office related work, right?
Office related. Yeah. Yeah. All office related. So like you have to think, it goes back to our earlier conversation about like the tasks that I need to get rid of. Right. And that are kind of processed out. So I just went through and I made basically a spreadsheet. I did a ton of Loom videos and just like, this is how we do this. This is how we do this. Right. It's basically SOPs via video. And made a spreadsheet and just had her go through all that stuff. And now it's kind of morphed into, she's helping out with more marketing stuff. She's super good at like the graphic design and she had actually gone to film school, right? So this is kind of those things where you, when you're talking to your people and you figure out what they really like, it's way easier for them to do something they like to do than constantly just doing data entry all day. So she's kind of moved into that. She does a lot of like our Facebook posts and coordinating that type of stuff. And then some of the people that I have that she kind of was friends of, there is a little bit of like marketing aspect to it. So it's like her, because she's in that trench, she has, you know, she has some of those contacts. So they've been helping out with, and I would call those more like almost like gig work, virtual assistants. It's not a full-time job, but it's helping us with different pieces and parts of the process.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you think the greatest insight is that you could share with the audience that's helped you find success with hometown?
You know, I think it's just that, just the focus on the customer. There's no other way around it. Like just have a great experience for them. And like the rest of it kind of will take care of itself, because if you're just making enemies constantly, like it's not going to work. There's a law of diminishing returns there. So just do right by that customer, have that, like that integrity in what happened or what didn't happen in that, during that process, and just, you know, make them happy, make them understand that you're there, that we're not leaving, you know, trust us to do what we need to do. So focus on the customer.
Awesome, man. Thanks, Brent. This has been another episode of the Roofing Success Podcast.
If you would like to generate more revenue through your digital marketing efforts, please visit roofermarketers.com to get a copy of the book, The Best Known Roofer. Also, check the training section of the website for guides on everything from running effective pay-per-click ads to how to properly set up your Google My Business listing. Thanks for listening.